was that the department itself requested, which was rather fortunate for us, to change from Friday to Wednesday. And as it turns out, what a good idea, we can't meet on Wednesday. Or not on Wednesday, on Friday. So members should be aware that this Friday, although it may still be visible on your programs, there will be no meeting on Friday. An official meeting of chairs has been called from Thursday night right through over the weekend. Right. So there we are. And where we have put the rest of the final adoption of that will be the following Tuesday, I think it is, we said, didn't we? The following Tuesday. So if you would note that, and Mr. Hermans will be making those changes in the program and sending out that, and that will be dated the 3rd of March. Right. I'm not aware of any other changes. Oh, yes, there is the one issue in written with respect to an invitation I received, an invitation from the Minister of Labour's office, but relating to the work of ETI. I'm reading this before, apologies, because it relates to beneficiation, and the 13th of March, as you can see, we have the National Gambling Board, which frankly is an important issue, and it's not one that, as Chair, I would like to be away on that particular day. So I do think that because I can't go, I need to send someone. And in my place, I had not even asked the Honourable Conti yet, but I would hope that as he sits in Manco, he will be able to go in my place on the 13th of February to George in the Western Cape Province. What it is, I'll have a copy of the letter made, perhaps Denver will get it done, but basically it's MTO Forestry, which DTI introduced beneficiation to. So you may wish to get that copy for everyone. Right, now, so I think the invitation was not to the committee, it was to the chairperson of the committee. And that is what I will be pursuing. I just realised the Honourable Bill Lewis is not here, but I think that is that apology he received. Am I right, Honourable Maxwell? Isn't it for two meetings or the whole of this week?
No.
Just today itself, fair enough. Is that in order then, Honourable Mantash? Yes, I'm just dealing with the letter first. It's just for my own benefit. I'd like that to come to the committee, and I'd like to have it proposed formally, the adoption of that position, although I am entitled to send someone. So can I have someone to propose adoption of that decision I've taken? Thank you, Honourable Mantash. Seconded by? Yes, the Honourable Kalako. Honourable Congi, you seem to be the last one I consulted. But I hope you're not going to tell me you can't, something would be an impediment. Would you be able to go there on Friday the
13th? Yes. He's coinciding with the issue of an addition. That also is inviting me to deal with issues of forest.
Okay.
So I think it's on Sunday, Thursday, so or Monday.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, there's a reception, I think. All right. Is there anything else in the room? I have a response. Okay. Well, I'm just waiting for the unfortunate one.
The chairperson, just on the meeting of tomorrow, luckily I think we started tonight. Now I'm going to be needed in the course of science and technology. Maybe I can come back, but I think
we have it. Honourable
next chairman?
Yes. Okay, thank you.
I think the light air conditioning is not working in here, and it's a problem, you know, and I think that, you know, it becomes difficult for us to hold meetings, you know, in rooms that are stuffy like this. So, you know, I think we can have it resolved urgently and in future ensure that the aircon is actually working in rooms, because I struggle with heat, to be perfectly honest. So, if that can be noted.
And as a matter of fact, I struggle with dust, and it seems to be settling here. So, if not pleasant, are we not allowed to open the windows?
Too hot.
No. Look, normally we do have air conditioning in this room. You're well aware of that. So I saw no reason why we shouldn't use it. Are you dealing with that in there? It's a matter of urgency. Are they on their way? Thank you. That's okay then. I won't make fear so much. Let's start with apologies then. What apologies do we have? I know we have Honourable Hill Lewis.
That's the only apology I have received, eh? But it's also been delivered from the union, yeah. But no one from the committee has told any apology.
No one from the committee?
Yes.
On that note then, we've got no further apologies. Can we have the proposal of the adoption of the agenda? Thank you, Honourable Williams, seconded by Honourable MacPherson. Consideration of oversight reports. It's going to be one report, in fact, eventually, composite. But at the moment, it's what occurred in from how it came up and what occurred in the Eastern and Western Cape. Right. So we're going to get straight into it. You will remember the way I said we would run this. We would run it right here with Ms. Hurling, our content specialist, Ms. Sheldon. Sorry about that, Ms. Sheldon. Just your new name's got me puzzled. Ms. Sheldon, yeah, you will be making the changes. We are not adopting this. This is the first block, and we're going through this carefully. I don't have anything else other than something given to me by the Honourable MacPherson. Who else? The Honourable MacPherson, the DA, is put in one for Harking and one in the Eastern Cape. Right. So we're going to go page by page, paragraph by paragraph. First paragraph is technical. The second paragraph under introduction. Part of the mandate, the department's mandate relates to industrialization and regional economic development. The way I think we should put that, instead of just saying part of the department's mandate, this is the number one mandate. Trade and industry, the number two. Because what is the new mandate? The mandate is industrialization drives trade. So it is actually the most important part of the mandate. And I think that needs to be made very clear in the Sheldon. The entities first, right, okay. If you want to deal with this one here, in terms of section 43, okay? 42.3 of the Constitution of the RSA, the one. Is there anything there you'd like to see changed? Oversight visits number two. As part of the oversight function, what we did, and it simply lists those entities. The next paragraph, the committee also conducted visits to. That is SIPSI, NCC, NCR, NEX. And we should have just written NGB in brackets. Purpose of the visit, that's noted, it's a technicality. The listing of the people who were there, Ms. Sheldon, Ms. Malani, Mr. Woodington, the purpose of the report. And then the technical infrastructure institutions, honest. If I don't see your hand, you know, I'm moving. I thought I saw something here for honest.
Yes, those are recommendations.
Oh, yes.
And I've made them under each specific entity.
Right. So we'll come to that later.
Right. Thank you for making a good start there. Then we look at the mandate there of Sarnas. We look at the discussion. The staff establishment. You notice the 80 employees and they currently at 71. The vacancies. No. And one of the factors limiting this is, now this is the part you ought to look at seriously. You know, the challenges this committee has experienced with entities requiring more space, and then we forget about it, and then they go eat. And the next thing, we get 10-year leases signed up. So this should be a little alert for us here when they say they need more space. It'll be a question we need to keep in mind regularly, and I think to tell them and in this report tonight, we would appreciate it if they would inform us when they have identified the suitable space and what the costs are in terms of the lease. Now that should be in the report somewhere. Just to preempt someone leasing what we wouldn't have liked them to lease in terms of costs. Turnaround time for accreditation. That is something new that SARS were given, you will recall that. Readiness, part of these processes have been automated, which could contribute to faster accreditation process. Because 3 to 12 months was an issue you were concerned with. The 12 months is too long. The status of funding for SARS and its outreach work in the region in Africa. You're then looking towards the end, and it says there that 43% of its income is funded through DTI, which has been reduced in the outer years of the medium-term expenditure framework. Its accreditation activities are self-funded. All right?
Verification. Is this the same? No, it isn't. Who did that fall under?
It was a rogue employee, he was told, who undertook this, and there is an inquiry going on. Which institution? He was promised. Yes. So that was in my notes, it was promised. And they indicated to us that they knew it was this company, but turned out the company were not aware of it, according to the letter they sent to Farmers. Yes, so please get that from Farmers. Where is this inquiry? And it turned, and they were informed that it was a rogue, in inverted commas, a rogue employee that acted outside of the organization, but put the organization stamp on. Let's just see what happened there. We don't want that happening again. Because of the country here. Rogue, you know, one of these, in fact, he does the wrong thing. He wants to make a few bucks on the side.
Not
so, what?
Not legitimate.
Not legitimate, yes. On that.
Sorry, I actually disagree with that interpretation of rogue. Rogue means, you know, to remain within the organization, but to act in a defective or illegal manner outside of one's mandate. One could use the example of the rogue unit within the farm. I'm just giving the correct interpretation of the word.
Right. I put this way, and that was a little bit too colloquial in my expression. But the fact of the matter is, good employees, we don't even know who was the good. We don't know. And we would really want to know before we take this into the house. We would like to know. Right. Because it gave that company a bad reputation, and it damaged a very serious, entity in our economy. The fuel level for the nuclear facilities, we have that. They underway with the industry on the process and to train inspectors. That is something we need to follow up on in the future, and we'll be able to call. The ladies have opened the blood alcohol center, that this is not attributed to its work. Organizations usually want to be accredited because it was prescribed through legislation. Right, page 3, 4, the mandate. The NRCS administers the national regulators' compulsory certification. The discussion. The issues the committee raised, the whole accident issue was raised, and the safety gear ratings. The NRCS informed the committee that all passenger vehicles had complied with EHO-2. All test reports submitted for this vehicle complied with the requirements for the M1 category vehicle. Hence, it's been granted approval in the local market. That is something you raised, Honourable MacPherson, and what is your position now?
One of the
recommendations.
Okay. Honourable Mkongi. Sorry, I can't listen for quality, but I just want to read it this and that is correct. You think that the committee inquired what the role of the NRCS was in ensuring that vehicles sold in the South African market were safe compliant. Is that right? Or safe compliance?
The compliance or safe?
What was it?
Safe or compliance? I don't think we need a debate. It must be fixed. The test reports obligated to verify that tests were conducted. Accordingly, in terms of that, a full frontal impact analysis is required. There is no obligation that airbags are air-operated. Testing of aerogel by NRCS. The research unit is investigating the matter.
Now, I don't recall them coming back on that.
One of my recommendations.
Where is the information on that?
Citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look to my recommendation, understand, I have said there that one of the recommendations is that we develop South African specific safety requirements pertaining to the importation of vehicles with minimum standards such as dual airbags and ABS brakes. This is in response to DAS and GO, which is fine to fail the Euro NCAP test and does not meet UN safety standards for vehicles. Note that the information relating to the passing of this vehicle in ESA, which was requested by the committee, has still not been received.
Yes, but what I'm trying to do is to get this information now before this report is adopted. But then, you know, I think what we've got to do is start working as a team. We should go through this, and where the information is not here, we shouldn't wait until it gets into the committee. Alright? Regulation of portable alternating current AC generators. That was you, Honourable and Concrete. Although the South African Bureau of Standards has adopted the international sticker, these have not been converted into technical regulation compulsory specs. In response to the letter to the committee, a letter dated the 6th, it has undertaken to do the following. It will undertake a comparative survey on the standards used by countries regulating them. SAD would be contacted formally to indicate its readiness to obtain accreditation to test AC generators, would also agree to the standards to be used, etc. A compulsory specification on page 5 will be formally registered as a high priority project, which will obviate the need to do a risk assessment. Now, I really, I think Honourable Nkongi, you raised a very important issue. We're all using generators these days, only to learn they weren't. Didn't have to be tested. So thank you very much, and now they're going to prioritize this. The NRCS further informed the committee that the estimated timeline of this for a suitable standard will be approximately 9 months. Who would have thought it took as long for babies? Anyway, South African Bureau of Standards, SAS. Let's look at that mandate. SAS is doing some very good work, you know. I'm sure you told all of your constituents about it. Develop and promote and maintain SAMs to promote access to markets and to advance the socio-economic well-being of South Africa in a global economy. Quality in connection with commodities, products, services, such as in the localization of products production in support of government ideas. I think what we should also put here, this is directly related to trade. Because trade, when we export a good, a product, it's got to comply with certain standards. Otherwise, we'll simply be turned back. So it's essential, you know, to the other mandate, part of the mandate, and that is trade. Render conformity, especially in relation to non-tariff barriers. Render conformity assessment services and matters connected therewith to facilitate. Why do we do this therewith? It sounds so legally. Render conformity assessment services and assist matters connected with therewith to. There can and assist in matters connected therein to facilitate access to markets. Competitiveness. Discussions. Dr. Meshu Makulu, the Chief Executive Officer, etc., briefed us. The relationship between SAD, here we are in the world trade. She gave us a long breakdown on that, and I think that that is something we need to take across when we deal with trading issues as well. The second paragraph, if national standards are developed to promote the globalization of trade, the country should use existing international standards as a point of reference in developing its standards to avoid hindering trade opportunities internationally. SAD is informed the committee that if a country has technical challenges associated with that, these can be adapted to suit domestic requirements. Notification of the new international technical regulation developed by other countries is disseminated by staff to its stakeholders. But stakeholders are of the view that the new standard presents a technical barrier to trade. The reason I'm reading this at the moment is because that is very important. Very important. I'll just finish that and we'll take your hand, Honourable McPherson. The SAD would subsequently inform DTI, which is responsible for negotiating and implementing bilateral trade agreements. So this, it may be of, you know, really may be constructive for us when we deal with trade to invite Dr. Michelle Makulu here to put that aspect in. And I think that we should remember that in future. So whenever we're dealing with this, including that, what is called the promotion and protection of investment, that particular bill was finally hit the table, we'll also deal with issues along these lines. So I hope members, when you're noting things, you'll note that you need to take it to trade as well. That's very important in the world trade. Yes, Honourable McPherson.
Thank you. I tell you what I found most fascinating about that trip was actually a gentleman, I can't remember his name, a smartly dressed fellow, and the innovation that they are involved in at SABS and sort of this innovation hub that they have there. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
What was the
Acme, was it not Acme or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just concerned that nothing in this report speaks to that.
No. That's my point.
Yeah. That was a very important project that SABS are involved in, and I'm concerned that in this report it doesn't speak to it.
We got to the media of the statement. You remember exactly on this? I want you to check that out and to add to it. And to put it in there. Honourable Colonel?
Can I just add to that? I think their correct name is SAP Design. SABS Design. Design Institute. And I think they were involved in the design in Darwin and Cape Town as well. Picking out, there was a report in the Cape Town yesterday on it. And some other newspapers. So, yes, I think that it can, at least, some sort of reference.
Right. I also think that more needs to be done about that, because it's very important that we highlight that. And I think we need to emphasize three things with that design institute. The number of youths who have been taken, stated, you've got an idea, you're youth, they're not asking how many qualifications have you got, you've invented something. Come in. And you were there, weren't you, Honorable Simon, weren't you also there at the time?
Yes, I was.
Yes. And you yourself are impressed. But I think the youth in particular, the innovation, and there's a phrase that I thought was most impressive. He said, if we want to really create jobs exponentially, not the word exponentially I'm looking at, we need to change the landscape. We need to change the landscape of the sector. And we are moving in that direction when you saw the SAB design. So we want youth, we want these new jobs that can be created and take us to the frontiers of science and commercialize them. And there was a third one, which you may recall. Do you remember what that was? A very important aspect in processing and adding value. It is something that came up in other oversight visits, that people grow, they produce, they bring things out of the ground, they design, but they can't market them. They don't know how to commercialize. They don't know how to market them. And that's why they are not being exported. So the concept of business, what they call that business what? We were all actors over the time. And they got you, the only ones with your heads up, the ones who were, they got their heads down. Right. I'll look up my head. It's called business something, and it includes commercialization and marketing. So that one thing, that is actually one of the biggest things we saw in terms of everything that they're trying to do in terms of the new 5-year mandate. Right, National Metrology. I think some of us were excited when we were taken to the vault. But what was in the vault was a gold bar or something. What bar was it, or would it now
no.
platinum? It's now a platinum bar.
It was a kilogram standard.
It was the official kilogram from which conforms to the Paris one, to which everything in South Africa is now mentioned and has been. And metrology has an impact on saving lives that we learned when many babies die of being given the wrong amount of medication because of the wrong instrument measuring used. You can read that yourself, discussion, risks to the user ability to fill its mandate.
On the Monday, when we're trying to say reference analysis, if you read it all, can we start maintaining primary scientific
standards? And perform the reference analysis or
referee? Referee. Referee
analysis. When you get a term like that, Ms. Madanani, when you get a term like that, both of you, I know you didn't actually just put it there, and then everyone got involved, it should be put in inverted commas, especially for the layman, because it is not a mistake, it is meant to be a technical term. All right. So until we get used to it, and then at the bottom, a footnote, what does it mean? So we can go and tell people ourselves. There we are, the inability to perform measurements at the required accuracy and certainty level. The inability and uncertainty. It says, the MIS informed the committee that technology advances allow industry to approve that, etc., which requires the organization to have measurements of higher order or accuracy than industry. Do we see that? And he raised this on the visit as well, you know, as we were walking. This was a real challenge. And I think that was where we went into the workshop. Do you remember that? That workshop we went into. And I must say, although a lot of good work has been done, it's clear that they may require upgrading. It may require upgrading. Lack of support by suppliers. Supplier will support equipment for 5 years after which they consider the technology outdated. I think this is an issue we need to take up. Like computer, as far as they're concerned, if it's not, if it's 5 years old, it's out of date. And the costs to replace, replacement costs are exorbitant. The question we need to ask is, can we even afford it, or is it so essential that we have to afford it? And I think that's the question you should ask yourself, because those instruments used in hospitals for the injections of these fluids, etc., had not been very tested, etc., it hadn't been changed for 7 years. Now look what you got as a result of that, many deaths. So the question is, it does have a high impact on life. And not on simply adult life, on new life. New life, where they are very vulnerable. But I would like you to look at that, and we need to perhaps ask the minister at some point
what the issue is with respect to the budget here, because the budgets have all been cut, as you know, they've been trimmed. And so what they're doing is they're reducing the time, they're sourcing parts for outdated equipment, has become expensive, which has placed an additional, well, I've spelled that all out, it's the financial burden. We need to look at that. And you know, when you do the BRRR, we're supposed to make a recommendation. I think one of the recommendations, who does this checking? I think it's yourself, Ms. Madalani. We need to keep this in mind, that when it comes to this, we need to be able to say, we need to avoid cutting the budget of NAMESA because of X. This is your motivation. All right? Longer calibration and service delivery time. Aging equipment requires a longer time to do the calibration analysis. It also, the cost of time, time is a cost. Information when they could be doing, and there's also the opportunity cost, economically speaking. Staff could be doing something else. The information technology compatibility, failure is all related to updates. Software platforms could lead to incompatibility in future. So you can see it's a very serious issue. You may wish to raise this in science and technology, Honourable Gwynhoff, as well. The ability of NAMESA to retain its accreditation in a number of parameters. The whole issue is to do with aging infrastructure. I think what we could do before the BRRR kicks in is to do some research in this area and get some more information, so when a BRRR comes, we are ready with that information, Ms. Madalani. Okay. Now, bottom of the page, human capital challenges. Development. A skilled workforce. As a knowledge-based organization, it relies on intellectual capital growth and must ensure ongoing opportunities for staff to ensure it meets future demands. The current trajectory for trained mycologists is negative. We were informed of this 2 years ago when the legal mycology bill hit us and we adopted it. We were told they were having challenges here. And it requires, now this is for all of us, intervention at a tertiary level to secure future mycologists. So, during your constituency, will you please try and attract the relevant, you know, learners who are in 9 and 10? Will you visit the school? You've done the visiting there. Will you communicate with the schools in your area to encourage them? And perhaps what this committee could do, Honourable Mr. Hermans, is that you look as if you were so intent on studying that I decided you have to be an MP. But Mr. Hermans, what we need to do is to ask Metrology, NAMESA, would they, if we identify a group of people, are we listening? Would they be prepared to, you know, show them around, make the visit much more interesting, and let's try and get one or two of their supporting companies to finance those learners' trips from rural and urban areas, and let's get a group of at least 20. What do you think of that? I think it's a good thing. We did do that 5 years ago with a group of people, and maybe this is the time to try and interest learners here. Okay, so that's something we should consider. Regulatory entities, subsidies. I have not ignored Nahar on that, and I'll come to that at the end. The Commission's mandate can and should be defined as the administration and performance of all the powers and functions assigned to it, as well as administering all or part of 15 pieces of legislation in Schedule 4 of the Act. So it's a huge volume of work, and you can read that there. Let's just quickly allow you some to go through all every bullet, register company. educate and inform the public about all laws, non-binding opinions, circular policy and legislative advice. Three. Maintain data, regulate governance of disclosure. Four. Regulate conduct. Share box scheme. I'm sorry that the Honourable Albert was not here, because we have many, many letters and emails from him in this regard. All of you should be aware of share block schemes. Register co-ops. And there we need to keep in touch with, the small and medium, small business ministry department. Register patents. That we may need an update from the DDG, Zodwe Ntuli, you know, the Intellectual and Property Laws Amendment Bill, provides the functioning of SIPC. Eight, register trademark, again that's under Ms. Ntuli. Nine, register firms, maintain data in that regard. 10, 11, accredit copyright collecting societies, regulate their governance, conduct and disclosure. I'd like to pose a question. Can anyone give me the name of a collecting society? Anyone looking for it? You are familiar with them, that's why I'm asking you, but maybe you didn't know they were collecting. Goes beyond that. A collecting society. Societies. Get down on the ground. What's on the ground? Doctor, what else? Burial societies. Come on, we all know of burial societies. Yes, and now the banks seem to be taking up that function. But what they don't recognize, these burial societies, we do recognize them. They have a constitution. They may not have a fancy thing, but they know who's chair, and they know the secretary, and who's the treasurer, don't they? A collecting society. But many, if not most, is that right, Ms. Naidu, are informal. The question for us to consider, members, should we encourage them to be registered? Does that give them a benefit? Do you follow? I'm just thinking of something that we should be thinking about. Record and coordinate search and seizure operations. Oversee depots and prevent and enforce the unauthorized use of state emblems. Of course, that includes parliamentary emblems and the like. You can't just go and use them. You need permission to use those emblems. Is that hand? No. Purpose, right. The discussion. The access to subsea. The committee is of the view that one of the biggest challenges within the subsea remains its inability to effectively deal with the large volume of queries. The subsea informed the committee that the rationale for the introduction of the Swedish model was to improve customer service, and that queries would also be dealt with by staff, not traditionally. And this is why I'm reading this. Just a moment.
Now, the one I'm surprised about, when you ask them how often do they check their measurements, how often does that infant take you together? We shouldn't wait until something breaks. And we are well aware of those issues of waiting until it's broken. None of us wait for that.
on air conditioning. And you know, all the time, not 24 hours, but how often? But what time of the day were you coming here? But they didn't, were they? They weren't. Any time on stick?
Now you can see the importance of maintenance, because as it turned out, the person who was supposed to be checking water somewhere clearly also didn't do their job, and then that impacted on closing all the valves and air conditioning. So you had chain effect. And all you needed to do is, like a motor car, your accelerator is loose, tighten it. Don't wait until the car's out of control. Right, that's never happened to me. Page 8. Volume of queries, etc. The Swedish model, some of you will recall, was introduced 4 years ago. And still, there are challenges. What to improve this? But it is, would also be dealt with by staff not traditionally working in the call center, thereby increasing the number of staff who would take calls. Not traditionally working there. After initial, the reason I've read that is the very issue that's been raised by Nahal. Honorable Mkongi?
I don't know, Supervisor. I don't want to be careful as long as she does what you're doing. I don't understand the context of traditionally working.
I know,
if we look at that letter with, you know, the package we got on the heart, you know, I'm sure we did get that out. Most people had received it anyway from the shop stewards. The shop stewards, yes, not from us. But the reality is, when this, what had occurred here is there were a number of people who were also brought in to SIPC. When SIPRO was disbanded and replaced and fresh legislation brought in, almost all the staff were new, because the whole SIPRO area was found to have been implicated in those issues that the Auditor General spoke about on several occasions. So much so that it led to the credit rating being directly affected. So that fresh legislation was enacted, the SIPC. Certain people were charged and others were, what is the word, perhaps not quite retrenched, but asked to leave, and others were transferred to other departments. So when you got people coming in, they were not working in that call center or taking calls. They were taking calls on their own telephone at a desk doing other work. And the committee pointed out that they were not up to speed with the calls, with the queries. The call center was established, but it utilized what a graduate or part-time or just casual temporary staff, not permanent staff, mainly students, etc., who had a fixed contract. And when they left, staff, permanent staff, who had never been in the call centre, I want to make this very clear, but they did take calls. In the course of their work, they were taking calls, you see. But when the Swedish call model was introduced, and I'm just going to ask Ms. Sheldon to expand on that, perhaps, because you were the person, I think, the content specialist who was here, and Madalani was not here at that time.
Okay, in terms of, initially there was a call centre, as we all know, for the yes, for you, not also CIPC, which was not functioning correctly. So the committee was complaining at that stage that the call functioning rate was too low. So the commissioner went to Sweden, they had looked at what that Swedish office was doing, and they implemented this model where instead of having a traditional call center, calls would go directly to people dealing with that type of query. So you have somebody who actually registers businesses, answering the call and addressing your query immediately, because the challenge with the call center was that even though they were logging calls, they weren't resolving it. So currently, I think the staff at CPC are not happy with the situation where they expected not actually on the calls as well as do their jobs. So the call rate, even though increased initially with the new Swedish model, that volunteers answering calls and not everyone, the levels now dropped again because of the staff dissatisfaction.
Because the staff have made it clear that they don't want to go into the call centre per se. They will answer calls, but they want to answer calls as part of whatever they're doing, and that is not part of the Swedish model, you see. Then, as I understand it. Is that correct, Ms. Hurley?
My understanding is that they would prefer the call centre the way it was and not getting calls directly.
Yes, but they themselves don't wish to go and work in the call centre. That is a point I'm making. So you've got this position that is prevailing currently there. And it didn't matter when you were using part-time people in that area, you see, because then you weren't using your permanent staff. But when the decision was taken that, look, this will be incorporated fully into the SIPC. That is when I think some of these challenges arose, because where were you going to get staff? You were going to lose the staff, and the committee said you can't have just anyone at the call center. You need people who know what they're talking about. So, you know, not traditionally working, so queries would also be dealt with staff who perhaps the words to use here, instead of using traditionally, they call it traditionally themselves, the shop stewards, but if you feel that we need to clarify this for the person on the street, we could say staff not formally They weren't you working in the formally. That was not their first posting. Can I put it that way? What do you think, Miss Honourable Montush? See, they weren't working there to start with.
I have no problem with the sentences
traditionally. Okay. So you felt that if you understood what it meant. All right, then let's leave it there. You're dealing with a lot more labour issues than myself. Okay, and perhaps others. After any initial improvement using C or and the dissatisfaction of staff regarding the inclusion of the call. Hang on, of the call resolution as part of their new, do you see this word, the new job description? Now they were required to be there, you see. That is what I mean when I said they hadn't been there and now they were going to be there, right. Sipsy, but that I must make clear. That arose from a committee recommendation where we said the call center person can't be someone he's just a student who doesn't know. Mm-hmm. It needs to be someone who knows what's going on. Sipsy also informed the, not a plus, the committee that following a request from the minister, it would reinstitute its traditional call centre, but it would be dependent on volunteers within the organisation. You see, that is what they're coming up with. And I think the committee needs to assist them in this regard. So I want, you know, we're taking this back to our parties, you know, respective parties, the things about the whole, we adopt this, you see. And I think that's a good idea to think about for that particular one. Horrible and Congi. Right. Sipsy, although vacancies do exist, the Sipsy and I agreed implementing a moratorium on recruitment until labour matters serving before the commission, etc., CDMA, are resolved. And that, by the way, is the reason we find ourselves in a challenging situation in Parliament. While the matter is before the CCMA, the Parliament should add their tuppence would really not be constructive. All right? Sipsy informed the committee that the call centre would be operational by the end of March. But first, before we go on constituency, which is on the 27th, please send a letter to Sipsy on the 25th of March, asking them that the deadline of the 31st is still operational for this. All right. And ask for that letter back by the 27th so we can see it. Yes, thanks, Honourable Williams.
Thanks, Chair. I think that you should ask more than just is the deadline on, because they could just send you back a letter saying no, and then you wouldn't know what was happening.
Right.
So I think that letter that you sent on the 25th should ask for a report on the progress made to make the call centre operational. Because if there's been an agreement, because the CDMA can't say, all right, we've resolved in the name of the how, and therefore all the people can go back and you'll end up with the same situation. They must have another plan to try and make that call centre effective. So I think your letter should offer more detail than just yes or no.
Thank you very much, Honourable Williams. I think that's a very good proposal, constructive. Turnaround time with respect to company registration. A major concern for the committee is a slow turnaround time for company registration, although the committee is committed to increasing the ease of doing business. Challenges still remain as the current turnaround time is unacceptable, which has a significant impact. There's a very distorted couple of sentences there, because the issue is clear. The main concern is the slow turnaround time. Although Sipsy is committed to doing that, challenges remain as the current, you know, remain regarding the turnaround time. The point is, you've already said it's not acceptable. So just reject that sentence. The Sipsy acknowledged the challenges, especially in relation to that, They pulled the committee, their current turnaround time is 22 days and has been reduced on a daily basis, right? Electronic applications by the end of February. Of course, that was when we were, we raised the issue there about what about those who are not familiar with all the electronics or don't have access. And we were told that in these multi-purpose centers to which we, they would show us one, they would have these terminals operating. We did go to one, as everyone knows. And we were there for about, you know, I'd say 10 minutes, and the first 5 minutes we were able to see it in operation. And then, most unfortunately, the ICTM had introduced the, that load shedding, it had been switched off, which was due to be off for 3 to 4 hours. The challenge was that people in the queue, and I think this is important, some had been there since 7 that morning, and now they had to wait for a further 3 to 4 hours before anything could be done. So there is something to note that the one needs to be aware that the energy constraints are impacting on these ATMs, you see, because particularly if people have come from the rural areas, they're not going to go home because the cost of the transport is too high for them to return. And that, were you there, Honourable Cornels? Yes. All right, shall we leave? I think that is something that we need to keep in mind for the conclusion, possibly. Needs to be raised here. And you didn't really put it in here about the switch off at that particular venue. The labour challenges are important, and the inaccessibility of the Zipsy, you know, the inaccessibility of the Zipsy can impact negatively on the economy, can impact negatively on the economy. Self-service terminals, we've just pointed to that. I think that is where it was. Was it the self-service ones? Yes. The services would become more accessible to the rural communities, and staff should be deployed to assist at the public at the terminals with their applications. I think that that was a very good point made by someone at the oversight. What about, you know, one of the departments, I think it's Home Affairs and Labour, they use on a rotation, different people coming from head office to go and assist at terminals in the rural areas, etc. And I think that that's a very good one that they could try. SARS does the same thing. So maybe we could remember that recommendation or in the conclusion. The lack of a clear communication from the CIPC on service delivery standards, the lack of that with the public around service delivery, there's currently no live update stream. The CIPSI website has been raised repeatedly, is not up to date. And this is very crucial because this is the face of South Africa's companies. We need to get that up and running. So we need, again, could you please, in that same letter we're sending, ask when this is likely to be updated to the website. Because I think that's important. The committee loves the view that open and honest communication is critical to mitigate against the poor public perception. Most of the complaints received by members with inability to receive updates on their respective application process. And I think we've mentioned honesty enough here. We need only mention it once. We don't need to mention it 3 times on that in relation to subsidy. They are required to be transparent, as a far bigger word than honest. Now, honesty is such a relative issue. When people borrow a book and don't return it, they don't think they've been dishonest. It's a very relative issue. So let's talk about transparency. Okay. I don't know if anyone who stole a book, they only borrowed it for 5 years. The committee expressed the view that the team should, yeah, I'll be jumped.
That's not the guy who stole my car. He's just borrowing it.
Well, he may have, well, the Americans, they do borrow these things for extended time. So you will notice the amount of borrowings of cars just before a public weekend, what do you call it, long weekend, it does increase. And cars you're not likely to find on your doorstep, they're likely to be found sort of just in the next van stream, abandoned. The South African Institute are part of accountants and the National African Chamber of Commerce, NACOC, to share information. A number of initiatives are being implemented to partner with them. We thought that that was a good idea because for some years we've been calling for this and now finally it's coming about. I think we should say that because this is something that over the years we've been saying, reach out to these institutions and we should commend them now for finally doing that, or at least welcoming that initiative. Now the intermediaries, so this is a euphemism for runners outside ETI who are to be paid something to fast-track your application. Yes, and you'll see that in the next paragraph. But they are also, I noticed that the deputy, Mr. Rory, who? Mr. Rory Collar, the advocate there, indicated in some ways they see themselves as intermediaries. But the fact that they seem to be operating in a loose manner, as it were, even if they were registered, it would help in some manner, but they haven't. But that communication between them is not effective. The city is putting in necessary processes. Well, you see, I don't agree with that sentence at all. Because what we have learned in communication is that totally legitimate organizations are using these intermediaries because they do manage to achieve what these organizations can't through regular channels. So it is not true that they're ineffective. The problem is, how are they achieving it? That's the thing. It's not that it's not effective. It has been done. They are being fast-tracked. But it's been done in an underhand manner. We don't know how. Are you aware of how? Can you address this? Content specialist wants to do is to separate some of these issues because the intermediaries are operating manually. I mean that's clear in your hand or whatever in an office or elsewhere. What CITC is trying to get is electronic processing done and get them onto the electronic processing. So what I suggest that is done here, because I think it is clear enough, CRPC acknowledged that intermediaries communicate with end users, but that communication between intermediaries and CRPC is not effective. Now, what you want us to say about that, Sheldon, that is the issue. Because if you're going to say communication between intermediaries and subsidies electronically is not effective, who is to blame? Where is the challenge? Is it with the intermediary or is it with subsidies? Do you see what I'm getting at? Where is the problem? You see, because now if they're communicating electronically, and it's a problem, where is the problem? Is it because they can't use the system, intermediaries? And therefore, because they're unable to complete the form effectively, they're unable to communicate effectively. I think you'll need to just do a little bit of homework to, if I don't understand what's here, let me check with anyone sitting here. Do you understand what's written here?
Then there must be something wrong with their system that they have to improve. Because electronic communication is always the best.
We're not saying that this is not a problem, but we need, can we explain what it is? We know there are two ways it's happening, it's manual and electronic. We are agreeing that when it comes to intermediaries, it should always be electronic. Isn't that what we're saying? We want all intermediaries who set up shop legitimately, we want that to be electronic. So please tell us what the problem is. Honourable William?
Sorry, Jar, I obviously wasn't at this oversight, but I just have a question. If we want all the intermediaries to be electronic, is the system, the electronic system, good enough to deal with that? Because these so-called runners, this is the runners, right? They only exist because... Oh, he's not the runners.
No.
What are the intermediaries then?
Look, a runner was only described as a form of intermediary.
So basically they're all middle men between the
yes.
Two. So that's what I'm saying. These middle people only exist because there is a need for them. There's a demand by the consumer.
Yeah.
So if we say to them, you can only go and work on the electronic system which doesn't work, others will spring up anyway. So we can't stop the consumer. We have to fix the electronic system first.
Now, I think this is the issue here that we just
need to unpack this. Chairperson, thank you. You remember even when you submit it manually, it will immediately convert it electronically.
Yes.
It then sort of scans into the electronic system, so the electronic system can cope with it. But you know, we should not... A runner is somebody with a contact. I think a logistics studio is somebody with a contact, and he normally fast-tracks the... your application. An intermediary is, for instance, an auditor firm of auditors in Cape Town. You go to your auditor and say, I need another company for my business, please register. I'm not doing it, you do it, I pay your fees, whatever it is. So it's your choice to use a auditor or a lawyer.
Thank you very much. I would like to propose that when we talk about these intermediaries, to explain them first.
Yeah.
What is it, and then we report about the problem, and then what is the possible solution in order for people to follow?
I think that will be a very good idea, and then unpack it in that manner. But you know, I know you've gone through a lot of work, Ms. Sheldon, as well as Ms. Madalani, and thank you. The role of runners now, and these are definitely people outside the system. The committee raised concerns about the role. And I may say that the deputy minister also did he ran a sting operation. A runner approached him, you know, because he couldn't believe what was happening. So he, you know, around there, and the runner came up to him, you know, what is he looking for? And he can do this. So the deputy minister has got first-hand experience of what a runner is. As it appears that they have direct access, and that is exactly what the Honourable Colonel has said, they have a contact inside, and then they all split the proceeds of what the runner has taken from you. They split it. to fast track applications. This raised additional concerns about the security of information kept by SIPC. SIPC informed the committee that there are no official agents or intermediaries who could fast track the registration of companies. These individuals are not recognized by SIPC and members of the public should refrain from using them. SIPC informed the committee that investigations in conjunction with SARS are underway to investigate the illegal activities of the runners. Any SIPC official found guilty of colluding with runners would face disciplinary action. Now, let me say at the outset, one of the areas that brought about the downfall and collapse of SIPRO were the runners. So this is a very important area that we don't allow to get any bigger. We actually stop it now in its tracks. Have we agreed to go on the route that Honorable Mkongi, assisted by others on the committee, Honorable Kornos, Honorable Williams, etc., and Honorable Munch, I should put forward. Have we agreed to go along that route then? Fine. So we'll see perhaps a bigger party and an explanation of footnote or something. The NCC. It was established in terms of that. Yes, the mandate is clear. The NCC is charged with that right. And we're going to that second part there after the mandate. It further seeks to provide for approved standards and so on and so on. It does not conclude or adjudicate on disputes between consumers and suppliers. Instead, it investigates complaints where there are widespread challenges in an industry and accredits consumer protection bodies to deal with individual cases. I want to raise the flag here. Consumers are required to first attend resolution of their disputes with suppliers. In the event the dispute is not resolved with a supplier, the NCC recommends that the consumer approach the provincial consumer protection authority in their respective provinces or the relevant industry ombudsman before approaching the NCC. The NCC is currently focusing on expanding alternative dispute resolution mechanisms. And I think the AER, again, is something that is really going to assist with the support of industries, sectors, and sub-sectors throughout the country to support. I'm sure he did say republic, but let's just say the country. So that to ensure consumers are able to obtain that. I think what is important somewhere here, and we will go through this, is that I hope somewhere on page 10, you've made it clear of the difference between the NCR, is the National Credit Regulator, and the NCC. Because we know that people don't know, look, I bought this whatever, car, piece of furniture, whatever, and they then go to the National Credit Regulator if there's something wrong with the car. The National Credit Regulator only deals with the financial arrangements, nothing else. Not whether this is a good product or a bad product. It's only the NCC that deals with the material concrete product. They're all good. And most consumers don't know that. They don't realize, they think it's all for consumers and they're not sure where to go. So I think there is a need somewhere to make it extremely clear, and I'm informed by Mr. Hillens that on page 11, it has got that precisely on page 11. Yes, and a very good example here. But I think the word NCR should just be brought, it has got it in here, and then put it in brackets, NCR there as well would be responsible for the credit aspect, the financial or credit aspect. So that people immediately realize there is that sharp difference. Coming back to number 9, page 9, I know that tea is for 11 o'clock. Anyone who needs tea or anything is welcome to just go and get some, but we want to try and finish up to a particular point. You then have that mandate, as I said, and we move on to page 10 here. AERs and the discussion. The strategic goals, the committee and its engagement with the NCC highlighted the following issues. We've got those very clear. The NCC should investigate prohibited conduct and not deal with individual complaints, hence the referral of complaints to the ADR. The role of the ADR, I'm glad we put that in. The committee raised the concern that information regarding the contact details of these agencies, nobody in my PC ever heard of them. Now, that may be different in your constituencies. So it's not known. And we need to make this very clear in the conclusion. It is essential that this is clearly advertised so that consumers know, as put up a taxi rank, bus ranks, and the rest about this issue. The NCC should consider publishing the contact details of ADR agents, especially those in operation with its website. The NCC informed the committee that it coexists with provincial counterparts. And where are these? If you're going to tell people, go your province, that's not very helpful when someone's got a problem and they don't even know where the province provincial one is. So it's got to be a lot more accessible to people. You know, you take the Eastern Cape or Limpopo or Northern Cape, it could be in Kimberley and you're in Uppington or Springbok. I mean, you know, where are these provincial offices? So I just don't think we're being very helpful as a committee. We need to insist that these are accessible, the information as to where they can find these people. With regard to the success rate of the ADR, the NCC informed the committee that although the NCC is viewed as the custodian for consumer protection, it empowers other agencies to deal with this. Currently, the NCC does not have the necessary steps. Just put them, remember, a letter to them as well. When do they think they can have, we would like to, as soon as they have compiled these steps, or when they have begun compiling these steps, can they please inform us?
Is there no performance?
I am provoked by this statement from this person.
Yeah.
And I would like to raise a question. When has the entity has a performance agreement with its employees, or is to say it doesn't have statistics, how does it evaluate itself? That is probably going to take us. It's a kind of statement.
I think, yeah, you know, look, the NCC at Syria is viewed as the custodian. Currently, it does not have the necessary stats on the success rate. And so, as you say, you're looking at an objective. Mm-hmm. I'm saying this is successful. What do I regard as successful? Mm-hmm. Maybe if we have the criteria. Because I can tell you, this was successful. On what criteria do I base that statement? Maybe we should ask them for that, please. Honourable Williams?
Thank you, Chair. You talked about where are they, how do people access them. I think that it's, they should look into trying to be, have either moving staff between the Tucson centres of communities, because some communities, especially rural communities, have Tucson centres where departments like Home Affairs, Labour, they all sit in there and they can maybe perhaps have that sort of access to the people on the ground. But more importantly, you're right, they need to actually, they can sit in there and nobody would still know what they were, even if they were around the corner. They need to be informed, the people, what they do through the media. But we must bear in mind that our budget's been hacked and slashed, so, you know, we have to bear that in mind. They must be innovative with their popularization.
Honourable Williams, it's also up to the committee to try and support this accessibility. There are measures we can put in place, such as asking community radio stations. I find radio is a very sound medium, and to have it on even in a taxi and so on, but where we could Because if you go to community radio stations and you offer them, not advertise, and you offer them editorial input, I know that a lot of community stations would welcome this. So we could ask Mr. Herman through the Parliament's media unit if they could contact community radio stations offering the services of the committee to communicate such information. Because if some of you are speaking isi Xhosa, Zulu, I suppose it's isi Zulu as well, English, Afrikaans, Sotho, and I mean the Sotho's got around six of them, isn't it? Northern, Southern, and whatever. The Free State speaks, I speak Southern Sotho, and Sotho, and so on. That certainly if we can get community stations in every province, it would help. And I'm not sure in Limpopo the languages are Tsonga. Who speaks Tsonga here? Who speaks Tsonga? Shangal is Tsonga, isn't it? Is there anyone here who speaks?
I also wanted to add that there are also, besides the provincial radio stations, there are community radio stations in our constituencies. So they can be a possible. For instance, in my constituency, I've got Takalan, which I use on a weekly basis for all the aspects that I do.
All right. What I will do then, I will ask the who is not under too much pressure of work. Is this yourself, Ms. Madalani or Ms. Sheldon? Are you under a lot of pressure at the moment, both of you? Do you have time to put a few of the, say, 10 points that should be communicated in the community radio station? Can we get that from you? When can we say we would have liked it tomorrow, we could hand it off. And then the rest of you can take it to your PCOs and go speak to your community stations. Yes, Honourable Williams.
Chairperson, don't you think the FEC should give us the 10 points?
Yes, they can, but it will be a bit long-winded. What we can do is let us put a graph together and say, can they expand on this? But remember, we want it for Wednesday. So ask them if they can have something for the following week, which you can dish out. A media package. Ask them for a media package. And then let's rely on you to work in your constituency on this issue. Compliance notices and its impact in resolving that. For that, in the past, it focused on the conciliation of complaints and the issuing of compliance notices. Although it was not the only tool at the disposal to enforce compliance, it had been widely used to deal with it. Businesses had challenged these notices on the basis of procedure and had been successful, and I think this is a problem in all cases brought against the NCC. This had impacted negatively on the financial resources of the NCC. For the last 2 years, the NCC has not issued any compliance notices and has rather gone the route of ensuring certain conduct and practices are declared prohibited. Only after completion of this process would the NCC consider issuing new compliance notices. In other words, they've been more proactive here and tried to encourage the right behavioural pattern. Accessibility to underprivileged, etc., communities informed the committee that its services are available. The recent recalls of certain products on the market required the NCC to ensure the recalled products did not find their way to small spaza shops. Now, they were very good in that. They were very good in that area. So we mustn't ignore that. The NCC's role in the it was actually the 699 cost scheme scam, R69. The NCC informed the committee that it was only responsible for the goods, you see, and I think this explains it very well. The only motive complaint if there were any defects on the vehicles. The National Credit Regulator, the SDR, would be responsible for the financial and credit aspects and whether the proper background checks were conducted before the credit was granted. I think that's a very important one, and I'm very pleased you raised it. And that's another one that you could say in the community chat. That, you know, if it's about the money you borrow, the credit, then that's the national credit regulator. You need to make it clear. A national credit regulator, the mandate. But I asked us to put something in here which is not. We actually said this during our oversight, that we were pleasantly surprised at the performance of the NCC. The NCC had been the problem child in the previous term in a very serious manner. With everything, with not one, no security, you couldn't spell the word security. Not only did data go out of there, but all the equipment, all the equipment could have just got out of an office. No one seems to know. You know, no checks on anything, and now they've introduced all of these ICT security mechanisms and so on, and I think that's healthy. They've introduced physical security on the premises, and that is very helpful. So, and on top of it, they've improved all of those good governance criteria that they were found to have not been compliant with in the AG's report. I think this is very important, because it went in a short space of time from being a very difficult problem child to one that is now showing us the way forward. Would you agree? I'm sure you see the staff are nodding. It was very problematic. And they are now, and also, instead of saying, yeah, the handcuffs, arresting you, putting your handcuffs on, they say, well, look here, Ms. Mantosh, you know, you shouldn't be doing this. Now, we don't have to prohibit this. You need to adopt this approach. You're working in a more constructive manner with your stakeholders, and I think that's important as well. National credit. Sorry, Arnold Mantas?
It could not only be one instance. It should warn and then go to the guarantor. Give punishment.
Well, I think this is what they say before issuing new compliance notices. So they say, we're going to talk to you. We're going to try and persuade you. Look, this is not the way to behave. And then if you don't listen, you're going to be hit with a compliance notice. But at least there's some form of warning, even though you know you're doing the wrong thing. So it's not that you don't know. NCR mandate. It was established there. Some wonderfully good news. The president is now, all of us have been assented to. The regulations are ready. And very soon, on the 20th, there's going to be a fantastic launch of all of them. I think it's wonderful that that's going to happen. And that finally, people in the street, the ordinary person, is going to gain this extra protection that the big boys have, all because they've got money and lawyers. All right. Is tasked with carrying out consumer education, public awareness, campaigns, research, policy development, registering new industry participants, investigation of complaints, ensuring the enforcement of the Act. The Act requires the NCR to promote the development of an accessible credit market, particularly to address the needs of historically disadvantaged persons, low-income persons, and remote and isolated or low-density communities. The low-density community applies particularly in the Northern Cape. And I'm sure you can tell me of other areas in South Africa where it would apply. The NCR is tasked with the registration of credit providers, credit bureaus, and debt counsellors, and with the enforcement of the compliance with the Act. The committee, in its engagement with the NCR, highlighted affordability assessment draft regulations and online credit life insurance. The committee raised the issue of continued reckless lending practices among credit providers to consumers that are already in arrears. The committee is aware that consumers at times understate their expenses, but it is a matter that should be addressed through legislation or regulation. I think we need to just keep that in mind, that one. The committee inquired about the status of draft regulations. Well, I've just told you they're not going to be all in force on the 20th, you see? So that's something we should note. And the NCR informed the committee that draft proposals on both have been submitted. The draft affordability regulations were published in August 2014. What we would appreciate, Ms. Naidu, is an official letter from the NCR telling us that this is happening on that for this report. So that instead of us saying it's been submitted to DTR, we can now say it is going to be on the 20th. Look, you follow. So we can get that positive. So just get back and try and follow that up. I'm looking, I know it's 11:15. Is it possible for me just to finish this? The status, or should I release you for your tea? Are you quite desperate for tea and coffee? Yes. Are you happy with that? All right. Everyone happy? Right. Well, there we are. Is Ms. December around? Ms. Willington? That one. The status of the investigation into small lender Ubank. The committee specifically highlighted the practice by the small lender Ubank, who is also believed to be involved in the practice of reckless lending. Who raised this issue of the Ubank?
The
NCR. No, it seems here the committee.
I know
they have. But see, you see, we highlighted the Ubank. They must have raised the bank, but we highlighted Ubank. I just want to see who did raise the issue, because I just want my memory to be refreshed here and my notes. What's the basis for believing they were involved in the practice of reckless lending? You follow where I'm going. It was said to the committee, Mr. Herman, he's just looking up his notes as well. Alright, the NCR informed the committee that it has referred the matter relating to Ubank to the National Consumer Tribunal, as it has contravened the provisions of the Act. It has, you see. The NCR informed the committee that it has requested the imposition of admin penalties and for the NCP to provide redress to affected parties. And it was still awaiting the ruling. Can you just clarify that? Have they had the ruling back or not? Can we get that information? Shortfall arising from the sales of repossessed motor vehicles and parcels. The committee inquired what the NCR's position was on any shortfalls arising from the sales of repossessed motor vehicles and houses, as it leaves the consumer in a perpetual state of debt. So there it is, you take a mortgage or a bond. Now you're retrenched, you know, whatever it is, you're now unemployed. At the time you had the money. Now the economy is, now you don't have a job. Now, you obviously, like a lot of people, you lease things. And only when you get the sheriff's thing saying that the house is going to be up for auction, or the bank gets it saying it is now going to repossess the house, because you've missed two payments and you haven't come back, you're then going to ring and there may be some response, but whatever, it goes ahead if you can't cough up the money. Now, that is where this comes from. The committee was of the view that the sale of repossessed vehicles and houses should be at reasonably determined price that does not leave the consumer in debt. Because what happens, as you know, let me just finish the sentence and I'll take your hand, Honourable McPherson, is that these houses are put up for auction and there's no reserve set. And you can pick up a house that you bought for, say, 300,000 or 180,000, 200,000, 500,000, and you pay off 200,000 or 250. Now, the other day, I do realize, of course, that there's the compound interest, but you don't owe that full amount at all. And some of them are only owed the last 50,000. It's taken back. The auctioneer doesn't get a reserve set. It's open. That house can be picked up for 200,000, 100,000. And who's responsible for what's owing? You. But you've lost your house as well. And so the idea was, is there not an opportunity to set a reasonable price here? Honourable McPherson?
Thanks, Chair. I think the issue that was discussed was about risk. And that in everything, bank carries no risk. And then the committee felt that there was, the bank has to, carry risk. They can't lend money with no risk to them. There's no business in the world that does not take risk on board. And I think that was really the crux of the matter, is how do we deal with shared risk when it comes to assets and disposal of assets.
You're quite right, Honourable McPherson. Thank you. Honourable Mkongi, followed by Honourable Williams.
Thank you so much. In that we analyzed if the house, the auction, the house, when it was calculated now, it was 50 rand.
No.
And then during auction, we only managed to get 40 rand.
Mm.
You see, so now the difference was falling on the consumer. So that was the fundamental concern of the committee.
Thank you very much, Honourable William.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that if we go for, we can't just say a reasonable amount, I think we should use a percentage. That the minimum, the base selling level should be a percentage of, what I'm saying, so we can set that percentage. But the other honourable member is correct. The banks are not taking any risk. And I think if we put more risk involved in their lending, they won't be so easy to just lend money to people who can't afford things. Because the banks are, they do that all the time. In fact, there's legislation to try and stop them from doing that. But yet, every 10 minutes somebody's phoning you offering you credit. So I think if we put more risk involved with their lending, they'll be less likely to lend to people who can't afford. And that is where this problem comes from. Thank you.
See, what you're looking at is not that per se. When it comes to the house, the person has been able to afford it. They're in a steady job. They can afford it. They need money extra that way. But now, you've lost your job. You do think, after 3 months, I'm qualified, I've got this trade, I've got that profession, it'll be okay, I'll get a job. In today's market, it isn't that easy to get those jobs. And we all know that. So, the issue is not, in the case of the housing, most of the time, they have been able to afford that house at that time. But when they've lost, it's put a spanner in the works. And I think I did say that the consumer, him or herself, doesn't pick up the phone very often. And we need to communicate with people, look, the moment you are unemployed, pick up the phone to your bank, or whoever's holding your bond, and say, look, I do have a challenge right now. I would appreciate it if I can get 2 or 3 months or 2 months moratorium while I do. People don't do that. They don't. Most of the time an MP hears about it, this thing is under auction eventually. That is the problem. But what we are saying, notwithstanding that, notwithstanding the fact that the consumer did not communicate, we accept that the fact of the matter remains, the bank scores left, right, and center here. Because he gets shot at his house. And I don't know if you're aware that there is a list of houses that have been repossessed. And there are speculators out there waiting for these houses. And they snap them up, left, right, and center. So, you know, the bank couldn't give a damn. I mean, you know, there it is, they've got a buyer, a market up here. So what if they can only get 100,000 when they should have got another 300 or 200? Because they know the original bondholder is going to have to pay that. And if they don't pay it, they'll be listed. You got it? And we need somehow to encourage them. And our Honourable MacPherson, you've made a point there to take some of this risk. They've made their money. The day they get beyond halfway point, they've made their money. Therefore, I think I don't want us to make a snap recommendation here. I want us to think about it. What, instead of reasonable, should we be putting a percentage? What should we be putting here? What should we be saying? Perhaps we can think about it and come back with something. Can we agree on that? Okay. There's, I think the whole committee agrees on that point. And there you see that as far as investigation, the shortfalls, etc., this is to ensure that credit buyers and sell consumers repossess vehicles and houses for at least a best price reasonably obtainable to reduce that. And you know, we use the word reasonably, and that is why we're having a chance to do this. All right. And I think our researcher, you may just be able to look at these issues, check with, I don't know, the auction houses or something. Do they not welcome some sort of reserve to be put on here? Not the banks put a reserve on. Why don't they put a reserve on it? So, yeah, this is the kind of thing I'm asking. Shouldn't they be more responsible? Legal assistance to over-indebted consumers. The committee raised a concern around the legal assistance offered to consumers to deal with the issues of over-indebtedness. The NCR informed us that they had explored relationships with various bodies, Legal Aid Board, Legal Resources Council, and the various law societies that can provide. Well, they've explored, but what are they coming up with now, having done this exploration? Can you ask them if they've been able to reach a position on that? What is the status of that? Provision of loans against consumers' pension funds and retirement savings. Am I correct that the Minister of Finance has just in the budget indicated that you're not going to be allowed to borrow on that pension fund? Am I right? Recently now. Some of you all listening to the budget. What did he say about not being able to borrow against your pension?
No. I think he was saying probably borrowing against... I can't remember, but I think he was saying borrowing against savings you had with life insurance companies, but it was not necessarily a pension. I don't think you can borrow against a pension. That would be illegal.
What is happening, as workers leave, many people leave, they resign to get their pension.
And then they
use their pension for the difficulty, if I can put it that way.
Yeah,
so what I would like, Ms. Mazzolani, can you just check on that budget speech exactly what's said around these issues, so we can factor it in here? Can we leave it there, because all of us are just, you know, sort of fitting our memories. Provisions of loans against consumer pension funds and retirement savings. Got all that there. With regard to APSA, the NPR informed the committee that nothing prohibits APSA of such practices as long as it is approved by the pension fund administrator. Because it says here, APSA, and I'm an APSA, whereby credit providers encourage the provision of credit against consumer pension funds and retirement savings. You see, so we just want this checked out in the light of the Minister of Finance's new statement. Yes, Honourable Mantash.
And the companies that are holding our pensions, yeah. They are consumers as the taxpayers, as the pension funds there. And at this point, are the consumers protected? Because for me, more than double the practice. When you are an employee, you are taxed on a monthly basis when you get your salary. You are taxed when you retire. You are taxed all over the show. Is it not double dipping or double jeopardy what is mentioned by the state to consumers? Even if you get your retirement or you pay out, a policy pays you out, you are taxed. What is happening? Where, at this point, are we protected against this tax win? Because we should be respected as consumers as well. You are taxed and we pay VAT when you buy food. You are taxed when you get a salary on a monthly basis. And again, when you retire, you are taxed. At this point, are we protected?
I think, let me put it this way, you're probably echoing the sentiments of a number of people, except those who don't have the money to even save for a pension. I think we need to be quite cautious there, because if I'm not mistaken, the taxation against a pension is on a basis that it was never taxed in the first place, a particular amount. Because you'll remember when you get your salary, X goes on the pension, X goes on medical and so on, and something goes on tax. Your pension, if I recall, is not immediately taxed. As I recall. But, and of course I should know, Venus, I've had that age. But we'll check, we'll get that in, researcher or yourself, Ms. Sheldon, just to look at that. Let's just clarify that. Yes, Honourable Kalako?
My pension is not
yet. Alright, Honourable Mantash? Yes.
My pension is like when you get your salary. Your salary, let's all listen, your salary is taxed.
Yes.
And that person that is taken into the pension fund is part of that salary. You are taxed according to tax bracket.
If we start the dialogue, I think we could get out of hand.
Can I clarify, because my take is that you are taxed according to your salary bracket.
Well, it's quite true that you will fall into a bracket. However, if you look at your pay slip, anyone who gets a pay slip, you will see certain things that are put aside, and then the taxable amount is identified. And it will not be pensions. It will not be. But you are quite right. The bracket you fall into is on the basis of gross, not net. So, you earn a salary, you're going to be getting whatever there is, you see? So, if you're earning 10,000 a year, if you're earning 20, 80, or I have to cook a guy 6 million a year, you fall into brackets. But, in terms of, once you're in a bracket, that pension comes right out, and a few other things come right out, okay? And then you put it aside. Now when you get your pension, you have the opportunity of being able to take a percentage, a portion, out in a lump sum. That lump sum is taxed, the one you take out. If you leave it there, you leave it there. But I'm saying, if you take it out, you're going to be taxed on it. Because you never paid tax before. That's really how it works. But yes, you could sort of say, and the Honourable Colonel perhaps can clarify this, no, you don't sit in finance anymore, do you? No. But we can clarify this ourselves with the finance people. Can we do that, Mr. Herman? Or with Thomas? What is the position there? And is it correct, as I have made a statement, that you are going into the bracket on the basis of growth? You're in that bracket on the basis of your growth. Okay.
I don't want to speculate when...
Perhaps we're not sure. But it says here, the NCR informed the committee that it would investigate the matter relating to Sanlam, as it does not have a definitive position in this regard, and with regard to APSA, that nothing prohibits APSA of those practices. Now you see the practices that APSA gets up to, whereby credit providers encourage the provision of credit against consumers' pension funds, so that, and your retirement savings. And you know, when you get that pension, it is already encumbered, can I put it that way? It's committed. Well, you already did look, and I don't think people want a house so much. Whatever it is, they want so much, for most cars. And they don't realize the implications. And it is for us, and that National Credit Regulator, I think, Mr. Hermans, will you just make note, we need to encourage the NCR to make it clearer to consumers, those taking our credit, that it is not advisable for them to do that. It is legal, but it is not advisable. Maybe we should say that. Do we agree with that as a committee? Is it advisable to encumber your pension in that manner? Honourable Williams?
Jefferson, I think we should be very careful how we advise society. Because fundamentally, if we're advising them that something's not advisable and they're wrong, how would that reflect on us? I think we should get more detail, because we can't just say this is not advisable and then not give them an alternative. Do you know what I'm saying? I think that we shouldn't be the ones, or maybe the entity should be the ones that do that, but then they've got to come up with an alternative, because best is never borrow any money, because you're always going to be paying back, and they're going to take away your asset if you don't pay them back. And we can't say to the people, don't borrow any money. So I think it should be very more strategic about if we're giving advice to society in general, especially around financial matters.
Do we agree with that as a committee? I think it's wise. Yes. Honorable Kalahu?
The owners not with the, because to me it's not a sad thing for us. It's a pension fund administrator. That is where this thing should be addressed. Not then. Unless I think we'll have to get maybe some opinion. How can we work really wrong before our intervention? And pension administrator, sometimes they could with banks, they will allow that. And knowing that you are in a needy position. So before we even make that advice, let's check how can we begin to put some direction for the protection of this pension with fund administrators themselves.
Well, I take the point then about it's rather the pension fund administrator, Honourable Williams.
I think that if we advise society that something is wrong, surely our role is to then change the legislation and outlaw that sort of practice. Instead of saying, we don't advise that you do this, we have legalised it. You can do it, it's legal, but we don't think you should. So surely in their best interest, we should make it illegal to borrow from your pension fund.
Yeah,
I think
what Honourable McPherson.
If you don't mind me just saying, I think within what digressing from the report, which is the recommendations that we really need to be put into, I'm sort of concerned that we're going into taxation of pension funds and all sorts. I just think we really need to try to bring it back onto path so we can get concrete recommendations. Because at the end of the day, taxation of pensions is not in our committee. We might all have strong feelings about it, but I think we need to keep it into our hands.
Well, why don't we do this? It is certainly something that the Finance Standing Committee should be concerned with. This is part of their mandate, all right? But what we can do in our conclusion, which is not a recommendation, is to note these concerns. And that which we are aware remain under the mandate of the Finance Standing Committee. But we ought to note it, because it is there and it's alert. And we can then, in a letter to artistic committee, the finance, refers us to them. So that is what we can do. Review of the total cost of credit. Welcome the progress made regarding a review, the review of the maximum interest rate formula as it discriminates against the poor. The NCR informed the committee that a study has been conducted and that the analysis on the review of this interest rate schedule will be concluded by April. That's very soon. So what in the letter, which is already going there, indicates that we would appreciate a copy of this as soon as it's released at the end of April 2015, and it may also be instructive for us to engage with them on that. All right? The National Lottery Board. Look, Honourable Mackinson, I'm hoping that as we go along you will raise anything that's come up in your recommendation.
Yeah, I didn't know how you wanted me to do it. You wanted me to do it once we actually dealt with the recommendations, once it actually comes to the recommendations. So I take your guidance.
No, I think you have been doing that, which was very helpful. I see here, I don't see one there for that, actually. Am I correct?
Yeah, the ones that I've made specific...
Yes, the ones you've got specifically here, I don't see that any relate to the NCR.
No.
Okay, no. Right. Now, I'm just looking myself, right. National Lotteries Board, and there isn't one on the National Lotteries Board either. Established in terms of that, what is it? There is. Number four.
Yes, it is relating to the National Lottery Board.
Well, it wasn't that specific, all right, in LB. Right, if you look at this, we then go to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 of their functions listed there. And all of those are correct. That is their job, that is their mandate. The discussion. Professor Nevyuk Tanda took us through that process, and the DAs in particular had been a challenge for the previous committee in the previous term dealing with this, and it was important that they had done a turnaround in this regard under the new legislation. Then we were looking at how they were screening, etc., and the receipt of applications and so on. Am I correct when I recall that this was a place that there was a room full of documents on the floor? I hope we did address that issue. Documents are generated and placed in the specific sectors. All documents in an application are barcoded and so on and so forth. The grant management system ticks in, generates an acknowledgement letter and an SMS is sent. Assistance to applicants. A major concern for the committee is whether the NLB assists applicants with the application process, etc. And how many are dismissed due to non-compliance with statutory requirements. And what they do indicate of help desks that are made available before the closing date. However, certain onerous legislative requirements, especially for the smaller and rural communities, remain until the amended legislation is promulgated. And just note that, because it is something that we've called for some time and has not yet been done. This should improve the ability of the organisations to submit eligible. They're not eligible, eligible, that's right, not legible, but eligible applications. Assessment of this. Documents placed on that or received index, you're still going through how it's done. And you get to an important point. It is during this process, the last sentence of that paragraph, also, that process that additional information may be requested where applicable. And applications are either recommended for rejection if they do not meet the basic requirements or for requirements for funding approval, not all. Four. On page 14, someone following that? If not all, I think we delete that. Process where application is incomplete. The confirms ways that deserving organizations are sometimes denied funding due to incomplete. The NLB informed the committee that applications must comply with necessary statutory requirements. And the GMS is designed to identify which applications do not. The NLB also informed the committee that it is not always a blanket rejection, and applicants may be requested to provide additional outstanding information. A recommendation is then submitted to the relevant DA for consideration. The DAs may also request applicants to make further oral submissions. So you had all of these submissions, but I do think somewhere here, and I don't see it, we should have referred to those applications on the floor, because they indicated to us they were not in disarray, but that they were in those bundles over there in that room, which was, if you take off my section, as wide long as the room here on the width, and that they were in the process of digitizing these applications, you know, these documents. Is that correct? So they were not just being haphazardly unfiled. They were specifically on the floor. And I think this point about digitizing everything should be noted somewhere. That is where they are going with this. They want this electronic. Pre-adjudication, they spoke about the due diligence. And I think that's... Okay. You've then got grant funding. That's why I don't like all those bullets, but let's leave it here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And we then have that. The adjudication. The DAs review the project assessments, etc. The DAs make necessary funding decisions, and so on and so forth. I think what was important was earlier on, and I don't recall you noting it, the different DAs that there were. In the distribution agency. No, it needs to be somewhere here. No, not that. We need to know early on in this document what are the... There are about four different DAs. There's the... yes. There are the... Right, under page... On page 13, under discussion, the process begins with calls being made for applications, etc., with respect to DA. And we need to say here, not just on the footer, that there is a five categories. There is sports, there is arts, there is charities. Just give it to us, please, Ms. Hurley, Ms. Sheldon.
It's sports. And recreation, sports and recreation, then you've got charities, and then you've got arts, culture, and agency as one. And then there's the miscellaneous, which is usually about 5%. The first category was the RDP category, but it's not being implemented.
In the law, there is the legislation, but they haven't exercised that in a category.
Sorry, Chair, the categories are determined by the regulations there's the legislation and there's the regulations. The regulations that determine what the categories are and what percentages are allocated to them. So if the regulations spoke to new categories, those could be created, but as far as I'm aware, there's only three, and those are being determined by percentages in the regulations.
No, they are. We did have under that new legislation which was passed in this respect, which gave them a proactive right. You know, they were allowed now to proactively seek out and identify any organization or institution which they, in their opinion, could benefit from a grant from NLB. So there is that, and I think that has become called miscellaneous, you see. So they, am I correct, that the one that they identify, a lot of different things go into it. But specifically it's sports, arts, it's miscellaneous. They have made it very clear that they are not exercising the RDP category. They're not required to. So we must get that clear. The challenge is we must put the percentages here because those percentages are very, very important in fact. And it's arts, charity, sport and recreation. But they have added the miscellaneous, which is something that doesn't quite fit into any of those categories per se. And that is also in relation to the, proactive approach in the new legislation. Yes, Honourable Williams?
Sorry, Chair, I just have a question for clarity for myself as I wasn't on this trip. Does the board have any mechanism to check that what people say they're going to spend the money on, they actually do spend the money on?
Yes. As a matter of fact, that has been introduced as well, a follow-up in that regard. But what I'm asking, which came up during our oversight visit, was the percentage of allocation to sports, charities, and art and culture. Okay. And I think that would be important. It would appear as currently, the art and culture get very little. The point being made by the committee on that oversight was it does seem to be a kind of Cinderella because for sports attracts a lot of funding by its very nature. A lot of companies want to be associated with sports. With the, you know, arts, and that kind of thing, they find it challenging to actually get funding from the business community. And yet, in the new allocation, when they had to exercise the cuts, as everyone was asked to do, they had been informed that arts and culture would take the biggest cuts. And they appealed to us to try and do something. And to that end, they actually showed us work that they were doing. In fact, they were groups who, without their support, would never have been able to commercialize themselves. And we're now commercializing everyone from the song and dance routine to more serious, well, that's all serious, of course. But the theatrical side of things, it was so broad, it went right into craft, if I could put it that way. It wasn't just what you and I know as arts and culture. You know, it's broader than that. What I'm happy to tell you is that in 2009, among the beneficiaries of the National Lotteries Board at that time, and they had committed themselves for 3 years, was Hilton College, the wealthiest school in South Africa. And we pointed this out, and all of the political parties represented on that committee were of the same opinion, that there was some misunderstanding of what the National Lotteries Board grants were for. So, there is no longer that kind of discrepancy. They have got charities. What they did indicate to us, one of the challenges was, and I hope it's reflected here, is that many charities in particular, when they get a grant, you tell them it's only for 3 years or 2 years or whatever, they seem to rest, got the grant, don't have to do any, you know. And then, when the grant is over, it expires, they left nothing. They haven't got a source of funding or revenue. And they said that one of their decisions has now been to encourage such beneficiaries to become self-supporting. I don't see that in the document, you see. And I think that that's important in the oversight document, that position is very clear. So I think it's a very good report. We've got the DAs here. and then the National Gambling Board. So I do think the NLB requested just before the gambling board that it together with the DA formally brief the committee of their position on the draft regulations, because it's secondary legislation, to ensure that these regulations are aligned with the spirit of the Principal Act. I think they agreed in principle. Are we still agreeing in principle? Yes. Right, NGV. Good. I am young. We nearly finished, and then Honourable Kalako, I'm going to ask you, Honourable Kalako, to take over as chair, and so that we can get through to the minutes. So I'm leaving this now at the National Gambling Board. I want us to adopt the minutes now, because Honourable Kalako was not present when the minutes took place. All right? So let's just get the minutes out of the way. And where are they? Yeah. Right. Let's start with the 7th of November, the 7th of November 2014. There will always be a couple of minutes there. And I see Subs, Colonel, from Kongi, Hill, Lewis, Matthias, and Shibambu, Simon, Albert, Risha. Right. Honourable Mantash, you weren't there, right? So you won't be unable to adopt or propose. On page 2, we adopted the agenda and went straight into point 3, briefing on the implementation of export incentives and national exporter development program. I would ask you to pull that out again for your MSEP and for IPAP tomorrow. The committee focused on that. Number 3, companies supporting it said to decline in the exports of wine to the People's Republic of China. Resolution. The committee resolved that Mr. G. Hilder should submit the relevant note to the committee secretary with regard to the proposed amendments to the South African Revenue Service draft customs control rules under Chapter 16. Has he done that? Good. Can we just redistribute it for the benefit of the new members? Felicia. Can we have someone to propose adoption? Honourable Simang, can you please sign here? You didn't sign, although you were present.
You want me to come forth?
No, we'll bring it across to you. Where is Denver? Right. Can we have someone to propose adoption?
Adoption.
Yes, Honourable Colonel, seconded by Honourable Mkongi. We then have the 11th of November. Everyone was here with the exception of Honourable Mtsai. Honourable Cattle, page 2. Please check that your names are spelled right. Opening the agenda. That was the overview of BBBE policy and code of good practice, as well as an update on the implementation of the BBBE legislation. Please keep this set of minutes handy. It is highly informative with the attachment that you have. The committee focused on certain issues there, page 2. And page 3. There was a public perception that it was only the black elite who benefited from BEE programs. The committee was concerned on how the poor black community would benefit from the amendment and how new entrants would be assisted and classified. The DTI, I'm not sure why there's a gap there, should look at whether the amendment bill would assist South Africa to radically transform the economy. That's very important. Research unit should focus on how to contribute to economic growth and eradication of poverty. The new mechanism would be used to monitor and evaluate compliance and to ensure the codes of good practice are taken seriously. Suggested that there should be an agreement between companies and the state on how to obviously would be complied with and the penalty to be enforced for non-compliance. Suggested that DTI go back and prepare a response on technical matters and reiterated that the amendment bill was a soft law with no biting mechanisms. We never got that. I want this and it must be here as soon as possible. Suggested that the DTI. The resolution, the committee requested the department to submit pages related to the amendment generic scorecard formula of calculation to the committee. Reissue that for the benefit of the new members. I see everyone who is here has signed. Can we please have one of you to propose adoption? Honourable Nantash proposes, seconded by Honourable Professor Mtima. Thank you. Then we have the 18th of November, and that is everyone. Well, actually, that was the last meeting. Well, that wasn't the last. Honourable Corporal, it should be noted her absence on all of the committees, because officially we were not informed. It wasn't ATC, and you know that that is a very important legality. Just get that straight.
Yes,
yes, Honourable. Yeah.
I think I was present.
Yes.
I signed the register and I even seconded the adoption.
No, we'll get you the sign.
No, I signed, but then it's in hand.
Well, can you please amend the first page to include the Honourable Colonels under the ANC? Right. Can we please go to page 2? The minister was present during that day because we were getting the SAMs on local verification processes, and that was also very important and what persuaded us to go hot and do the oversight. Page 2. Then we have page 3. I see there's a book just before 4. It could be, it would be, not could, it would be, in the country's interest, if ministers and government departments drove locally manufactured vehicles. The awarding of the 5th local county verification certificates. This did take place, and it went off very well. Page 3. Page 4, we were passing minutes. Closure. Everyone has signed who was there. Can we please have someone to propose adoption of the 18th? Honourable MacPherson, seconded by the Honourable Colonel. The last, well not last, 10th of February 2015. We then have the issues on 1. Have we got everyone here who was there? I see Honourable Williams, you're here for the first time, and so on. Right. Absent Honourable Mkongi. Right. 1. Page 2. Briefing on the investment promotion and bilateral investment treaties. Very important, that one. And petty business, please, the way you file things, it would be important to try and include this with a file opened up for that act when a bill when it comes along. It will be here this year. Committee business. And page 3. I want you to check this out, this is very important. The end of page 2, we have such cases, well that was about committee business. Under 3.1 on page 3, Dale Lewis tabled a forensic report on claims made by the company's tribunal members, the committee to conserve. In response to the tabling, the chair on behalf of the committee stated the committee would study it and act accordingly. The committee secretary briefed the committee on the written responses received from entities. We have that, right. Resolution. The chairperson requested the DCI to submit the following information in relation to the investment promotion and a list of countries that have survival clauses. Have we got that? Have we got it? A matrix of other countries' position on major issues related to BITS. A list of, I'm looking at new members, a list of countries that have large investments in South Africa without having a bit, we know Japan's one, on the Pearson.
I just wanted to know if I could go to 3.1, because I wanted to make some form of a correction there. When it said, Mr. Lewis tabled a forensic report on claims made by the company tribunal's members, the committee to consider. I don't think that's worded correctly. It is the outcome of the forensic audit report. It's not claimed by members, it's the outcome of the forensic report.
Can you just read that then, Mr. Herman, as you phrased it into the mic?
Mr. Hughes will say forensic report on the outcomes of forensic audit report, and then I'll continue to correct it, but that is the key thing that he wants to finish.
Right.
And then Chairperson?
Yes,
then just on matters arising, you said that you would study it and act accordingly. When could we expect a response in that regard?
Sorry about that. I, in fact, did receive it, as everyone, as you know, did receive. Thank you very much. I haven't had the opportunity of going through it with Mango and the new whip, because at that stage we did not yet have a new whip operating with us. And we do want the Honourable Nkongi, Honourable Kalako, and myself, together with the committee secretaries. As you see, we've got a new committee secretary since then to sit with us in Manco, going over that. So I'm looking at you, Mr. Hermans. Our next Manco is next Tuesday. Am I right? So next Tuesday, this will be tabled then. Is that great? Thank you very much. So let us earmark Wednesday for a response. Thank you. All right. On that basis, then, we were just moving 3.1. Yeah. And then committee business, etc. Can we have somebody on falling? We got all that. The oversight, the closure. Can we have somebody to propose adoption? Yes, Honourable Williams, seconded by Honourable McPherson. With those amendments, please. Yes. Right. And the last set of minutes to be adopted is the 24th of February. 24th of February, gosh, we've got a huge team here. Right, last week. And apology, Honourable Williams. You were ill then, so I recall, yes, adoption of the agenda, the briefing with the review of faith affairs. I know we're inclined to sometimes see this as being off the radar screen in more ways than one, of course. It is above the radar screen. But I think it's very important that we actually look at this seriously and not see it as an extra. We need to work closely with science and technology on this, and we are getting more information on the IAC, which is in Jerusalem. And, you know, I've always wanted to say I'm going to Jerusalem on a pilgrimage, but it'll be a space issue. And let us put something in on the Manco so that we can process this through the Chair of Chairs. Thank you very much. And we have somebody to propose adoption of the 24th. Honourable Korinoff, seconded by the Honourable McPherson. Those are your minutes. And I am now going to ask the Honourable Galako, please take the chair and to complete the issues of the oversight report. Thank you. Just say that you are aware, we really need to get through the second one as well. It's not as large as this one. So if we can quickly whiz through this one and get through that one, it would be very helpful. If we don't, we could try and make some space tomorrow to complete it. I think that's both for your benefit, Honourable Kalako. Thank you very much. By the way, I am leaving the chair so that I can attend the budget meeting part, which will inform the process that we will conduct in committee. Thank you.
Tim, what we would be doing since you, most of you, you were in the tour, I will use a different approach. Let me start with that. what I will request from members who are there, if I will take it, all of us who have gone through, because this was circulated, that's why I'm using a different approach. You might not be accustomed to it yet, but usually in the committee which I was, we usually follow that. I will teach it that we have gone through as it was circulated to us. I will only object members of areas which they see they are not added or need correction. Let's just open for this correction. I won't read through them paragraph by paragraph.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm just trying to understand, maybe the committee secretary can help us, how are the recommendations, how are those being included? Because they actually haven't been formally, it's just something that's been laid on the table. We've dealt with the first one, we've dealt with the first, six, but those actually haven't been included, rejected, it's just sitting there. So I'm a bit confused, Chairperson, as to what's being done with the recommendations that we've tabled.
Chairperson, if I may, the process normally is that the committee will look at the recommendation made by any member, and they will have to agree to either disagree or amend that recommendation made by the member. We haven't gotten to that process yet. We're looking at, because we received the, normally what we would have done, we would receive the recommendation, would have included in the report in the body, but we received it dividend this morning, so that hence it was two separate jobs. So what will happen, it must be tabled by yourself for consideration by the committee. So you form, although if you have it, you formally move that recommendation when we deal with recommendations, and the committee will then either agree or disagree with what you are proposing.
So can we just say that just for the purpose of Hanford and the minutes, the committee votes the recommendations that I've made?
Yeah. We agree with that.
We will agree to note the recommendations, Chair, and we can't refer to adopt them now.
Okay. Agreed, Mama. So, is there anything on board before we move on? Nothing. You agree with that it reflects the same thought. Member, can we move quickly to... If that is agreed, I think what will happen is that we've gone through it is for you to take into consideration the discussion. Members, we can move to the second set as the staff will add and correct on the based on the deliberation here, and then so that reflect on them when we will be going in the next meeting for adoption of this the oversight. Now we are on the draft report on oversight Eastern Cape and Western Cape.
Just on administration, I think the delegation who went to Saldanha Bay Industrial Development, and was a different one who went to the other. So I think we all say that there's a fifth section number.
Page 1. Any corrections or additions or methods? Page 2. Page 3.
I see there's one paragraph on it, but I don't see any reference with regard to the salary structure. And I know it was discussed when I left the meeting, but you know, I think we should be something about that.
Sure.
And also that they clearly told us that they're gonna be in the need of I think 280 or 380 million rand. So I think we need to
page 4. Any issue? Page 5. Page 6. Page 7.
I just wanted to say, Chairperson, on the question of the certain update, I don't think the secretary has made justice, because the course that we have taken there are not mentioned here, and the content of the submission, because they spoke about it, the way they managed to convince the stakeholders to work together, particularly the communities and people, which that could be the model, because most of the course that we do, the main stumbling block is the one, the cooperation between stakeholders, their business model in terms of mobilizing business people to buy. The issue of how is their funding structured. Those are fundamental policy questions. Structured, they are being paid by the province for their own administration work, which has been a problem at COFA. So those are the things, their relationship with local government, their experience that we have received today. So I thought it's necessary that they must be highlighted.
I wanted to support the honourable member. And fourthly, you know, there was an environmental issue in terms of the red dust, and that they, I think we should just mention that is a concern for the possible growth of the IDC, or IDZ in that area, but, and then, you know, it was a positive visit, and I think we should say that, you know, there were positive things, and I think we're on the verge of a huge oil and gas industry that will benefit. And, you know, we should keep them to the time limits, because we don't want the 120 oil rigs to pass and go to the Middle East and Asia or Europe. They should stop here. And time is of the essence. And they have set in their presentation various timetables, and we must keep them to those timetables. So I think we need a more comprehensive report.
Page 9.
Please.
Mark, I think you are on the same page.
Yes, yes.
Oh. I just wanted to direct the comment of the Commission after I explained. You said how we're going to deal with the Commission. Okay.
Normally we request members to submit the recommendation so that we can incorporate it into the report. Then the committee will look at the recommendation. From a procedural perspective, we will correct from a procedural perspective the recommendations, but the decision about the recommendation will be the committee's. So we are waiting members to submit the recommendation for consideration. The intention is, as the chair has indicated, that we want to formally adopt the report on Tuesday. So we want to receive those recommendations. And then from a procedural perspective, we'll correct it and incorporate in the report for the committee next Tuesday to formally look at this recommendation, either agree with the degree and go forward and go forward from there.
I think it's important that I just wanted to know how we're going to deal with it. So I'm not sure the possibility that we can receive these minutes as soon as tomorrow or else Thursday, this report, and then we can prepare for
your intention to incorporate the changes that are proposed by the committee now Thursday, we should be able to distribute a cleaner copy of that report to the committee. It doesn't stop members of us changing or adding to it still.
And it's becoming one report.
We will incorporate it into one report, but it doesn't mean that on Thursday members will feel that they need to add, we do something, members will forward that information, we can incorporate. So on Tuesday, we will have a more consolidated report for consideration.
So we can agree that the members will get it on Thursday. Okay, page 9.
That is why I was raising my proposal almost at night.
Yes.
Because I didn't have this. The whole number. It's only one and then it's incomplete. You have to realize on Saturday and then it's incomplete. I didn't have this.
Yeah, and that. Okay. Then. So what you are raising is it's covered here on page 9. Page 10.
I'm not sure this is covered for the last event, but I was concerned about the complaints that the practicing raised on the threat that has been taken out in a fall for the case. I'm not sure if this is covered here and on the last one.
Yes.
have enough caption and you're sending it to your vision to what you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nothing on this then, colleagues. Yeah, the both recommendations were good. Remember that the composed this one. So as we have a member, we'll get on Thursday so that we make corrections and add so that we can be ready for the next meeting. That concludes the meeting tomorrow, is it? Or M314. 9 o'clock. No, I think in the study group of the respective parties, we should be looking at this thing. But thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.